Mom, my grandmother did the same to me when I was looking for my wedding dress, the mother said. It's a family tradition. What's the tradition? Carissa said. To make me even more crazy than I already am? Don't worry about it. It's a superstition. She's planting a seed. What seed? Dysphoria, the mother said. Carissa shook her head. Never heard of it. Dysphoria is the opposite of euphoria. It's a state where you're not too happy. You're uneasy. You're uncomfortable. Ma, I don't get it. I'm shopping for my wedding dress. Why shouldn't I be happy? Because what you're doing today should be done once in a lifetime, the mother said. And if you're too happy, then you might want to do it again. Carissa put her hands to her face and felt the tears trickle down her fingers. Then she wrapped her arms around her grandmother. I love you, Yaya. A smile spread across the old lady's face as she hugged her granddaughter. Sraga po glikyamu. At 11:18, the three women left Yaya's house on 32nd Street in Astoria and made the 4-minute walk to the subway. At 11:29, they boarded the W train to Manhattan. At 11:43, they arrived at the 59th Street Lexington Avenue station and transferred to the Downtown 5 train. At 11:58, they arrived at the Wall Street station. At 11:59, the bomb exploded. They died instantly. Chapter 1. Thursday, 11:54 a.m. Central Park. He had done his research. The sheep meadow in Central Park was the best place in New York City to make an untraceable phone call. Almost every incoming call to a city agency could be triangulated to within 10 or 20 yards of the point of origin. And since there were cameras everywhere, as soon as they zeroed in on your location, they'd have a high-res picture of your face. And once they had that, how long would it take for them to have you in cuffs? Even if he called from the Staten Island Ferry in the middle of the Hudson River, the ubiquitous eyes in the sky would pick him up boarding at the Whitehall Terminal or getting off at St. George on the other side. But the sheep meadow, a sprawling 15-acre lawn on the south side of the park, was one of the few remaining places in the city of 9 million people where a person had a shot at remaining invisible. On a normal sunny July day like this, there would be hundreds of people stretched out on the grass, reading, relaxing, or simply reveling in the elegantly conceived, brilliantly executed pastoral sanctuary in the middle of the urban madness that was New York City. Sure, the cops would know where the call came from, but there were no cameras close enough to identify him. Not only was this the best place to hide in plain sight, but today was the perfect day. There was a concert tonight, and by 11:30 this morning, thousands of music lovers had already staked their claim to a blanket-sized patch of ground. He was giddy as he watched them pour onto the meadow from all sides. He could have worn a red and white striped shirt and bobble hat like the Where's Waldo guy, and he'd still be lost in the crowd. He waited until 11:54 to make the call. 5 minutes wouldn't give them enough time to do anything, and he needed to go on record that he was the one punishing the city for what they had done. After the bomb went off, every glory-seeking asshole in 5 boroughs would be calling in and taking credit. He had vacillated about whether to call 911 and talk directly to the cops, or call the non-emergency number, 311. He finally decided on 311. He wanted the person on the other end of the phone to be smart, but not cop smart. Calling a civilian was a safer bet. He knew that the call would be recorded, so he bought the most sophisticated voice-changing software he could find. He dialed, wondering who would answer. Whoever did would remember this call forever. The call went through.
Hello, and thank you for calling